From HanselMinutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 322, recorded live Thursday, June 7th, 2012. This episode is brought to you by Telerik, offering the best in developer tools and support. Online at TELERIK.com. And by Franklins.net, training developers to work smarter. And now offering Gesture Pack, a powerful gesture recording and recognition system for Microsoft Kinect for Windows developers. Details at gesturepak.com. In this episode, Scott talks with John Sonmez about getting fit.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes. And today I'm talking to John Sonmez, and we're going to talk about fitness for programmers. Hey, John, how's it going?
Doing good. How are you, Scott?
I'm okay. I hit 164 pounds yesterday from my height at the CodeMesh conference. I was 195, so down about 30 pounds. Is that how do I know if that's a good weight for me?
Well, I guess, I mean, it depends on your height, and it depends on how much muscle density that you have, kind of what you're looking for.
I don't want to be skinny fat. I've heard about people who are skinny fat, where they get down to a certain weight, but most of it's fat anyway.
Yeah. I think, you know, the biggest thing that gets people in that skinny fat mode is really, there's the two things is they don't have enough muscle on their frame, and then their diet is not really good. And I've noticed that just from dieting up and down, you can end up putting fat in certain places that stay there and they accumulate, because you end up getting like places where it's really hard to lose the fat, but first place that it gains. And so by dieting up and down, you end up getting to that part where parts of you are super skinny and you look ripped, but then parts of you have a lot of fat.
Are there any particular parts that you want to mention by name that I should know about?
Well, for guys, it's mostly around the midsection, or the back fat, like right around the midsection. I know for me particularly, that's where I'll store it.
Interesting. Because right now, it was really an issue of I was looking at myself on video, because I'm always in at conferences presenting, and then I see myself and I'm like, wow, that dude looks totally bloated. And I'm about 5'10 and a half. 5'11, and when I started getting up towards 200, I just didn't feel right. It seemed like it was a lot of me to carry upstairs, and it wasn't that I was eating particularly bad food. It's just that I don't think I was moving enough. So I got a Fitbit, which is a little electronic pedometer, and I started using the Lose It application. And this is actually the second time that I've tried to lose weight. I got down about 15, 20 pounds, plateaued for about 4 weeks, and then finally said, forget this, and then started going hard again. And now I think the Fitbit says that I'm trying to do my 10,000 steps a day and stuff like that. It happens sometimes. I'm about 164, 165, 5'10", lean, I think. I think I'm lean. But I also got a Fitbit scale that tells you your body fat, and it says somewhere between 18 and 19, which seems like a lot.
You know, it depends. I mean, it depends on when you're taking the measurement. The water content in your body is going to have an influence on it. So typically, I find that those are a little bit higher than, you know, you could get like a body deck scan, and there's some other techniques you can use to get a very accurate measurement. But you know, also, a lot of people don't realize that, you know, like if you wanted to get six-pack abs, for example, you got to be sub 10%. So it's actually, you know, you might not look at, like, if you're at, say, 18 or 19%, you're not going to look fat, because that's not really a lot of fat, especially if it's well-distributed. But in order to get totally ripped, it's quite a low percentage of fat.
Really? So 10% of 160, 170 pounds, 17 pounds. That means I would need to either lose and or redistribute 17 pounds. That's a lot of movement.
Oh, yeah. And here's the really tough part about this. And you know, this is probably something that's like the general population isn't going to be so interested in getting like totally ripped, but not only that 17 pounds, but if you were to just try to lose 17 pounds of fat, you couldn't do it because typically you're going to lose about, you know, for every 1 pound of fat, you're going to lose about, it depends on body composition and metabolism, but a pound or two of muscle.
Yeah, that's the other thing. As I'm losing all of this weight, I'm wondering to myself, okay, I've lost 30 pounds of something. Did I lose 15 pounds of muscle? I hope not. I've been really, you know, trying not to do that. How do programmers who are usually fairly sedentary avoid losing as much muscle as they do fat?
So there's a couple strategies that I use that I've kind of learned over time. One of the biggest things is to have enough protein intake and to be lifting pretty heavy weights and pretty intense. And you don't have to, you know, you don't have to be in the gym, you know, 5-6 days a week. I only lift 3 days a week, and that's plenty to keep the muscle that I have and to maintain. And as long as I'm eating enough protein, I find that as long as dropping weight slowly, in addition to doing that and eating the correct foods, I don't really lose that much muscle while I'm losing fat. In fact, I'm slowly losing maybe about, you know, maybe a half a pound or a pound a week, but I'm maintaining muscle or perhaps even gaining a little bit of muscle.
Mm-hmm. Now, I've heard this a lot about lifting heavy weights very kind of very slowly, very controlled, right up to the limit. Like I'm used to, and I was taught to do kind of 3 sets of 10. You know, that was kind of the standard thing. And then the last 10 should be kind of 2 failure. I'm hearing more and more that people who want to kind of body hack or get and or stay big, if they can do a set of 10 and that's it, then that's fine.
I think, you know, I tried, you know, I'd read a book. I don't really want to knock a book, but it didn't work for me. It was Timothy Ferris's 4-Hour Body.
Yeah.
And he talked a lot about this idea of the minimum required dosage. And that really resonated with me. And I thought, okay, this makes a lot of sense. And I tried that with lifting. I've been lifting for about 16 years. And I tried that for about maybe 6 months to somewhere around a year of basically trying to just do 1 set, but doing it heavy, doing it to maximum failure. And it really didn't, I lost a lot of muscle by doing that. So, and it might have been just me, you know, I think the idea is still somewhat sound, but I think maybe the minimum required dosage is actually a little bit higher. I think from I've experimented with, you know, 1 set as a warm up, doing 3 working sets, doing 5 sets, doing just a single heavy set. And I found that basic advice that we were all told seems to be the best, which is to do basically 3 sets and somewhere around, you know, I tend to make my ranges between 6 to 8 reps, but 10 seems to be a fine number as well.
And how many sets of 8 to 10?
Just 3 per exercise is what I usually recommend and do.
Now, you said you've been lifting for a long time, but I assume that a lot of the listeners and myself as well, while I was big in high school and did a lot of lifting in high school, I've forgotten all that. I mean, 20 years ago, I knew my gym backwards and forwards, but no longer. How do I keep from really hurting myself out there?
Okay, so I think, you know, that it's important to start off a little bit slowly and to know what you're doing. You know, there's a lot of good sites out there. You know, one of them that I really like is bodybuilding.com. They have like free videos where you can see how to do exercises. Sometimes the magazines that we get are not so much the best advice I've found, but sites like bodybuilding.com, I found good advice. And, you know, it's core lifts. Really, you know, if someone were just starting out, I'd give them some advice on weightlifting. I'd say, you know, don't do these isolation exercises. Do the things like do bench press and learn how to do it correctly. Do squats. You know, an unpopular one. Well, squats are pretty unpopular, I think, but deadlifts, because that's it. It's almost a full body workout. It's a really good solid core lift. Military press. If you only did those lifts, you you would be building, you'd be maximizing your time in the gym, and you'll be building, all of those exercises are compound movements. So they're going to be help build your core and to build the muscles in between that, that are going to help make that entire movement happen. So you're going to get stronger, not just bigger, but stronger in totality, rather than if you're doing a lot of isolation exercises, you know, you might be working just those muscles, but the kind of connecting and ancillary muscles don't really get that, that workout. So they don't grow, and you're kind of more prone to getting injured.
Don't I need a spotter or a buddy to go out there and start doing bench presses and deadlifts?
You know, it's I don't know. I've worked out with a buddy before, and I prefer it. It's nice. You know, I just moved down to Tampa here, and I don't really know very many people here. So I've been working out for the past about a year. Just, I've never been in a point where I felt like I was in danger. You know, there's precautions you can take. If you're on a squat rack, I always make sure that, you know, most squat racks have a little thing that you can put to prevent you from going too far down or to catch the bar. And so, you know, the worst that's going to happen is, as long as you're using good form, you know, but as far as dropping weight or something, the worst that's going to happen is you go down to that level and you're not going to be able to bring it back up. And, you know, it might be a little embarrassing, but hey, you know, and on bench press, I think the only time I ever really see anyone get injured on that is really when they try to use that outside thumb grip where they're, you know, I always say just wrap your hands around the bar completely. Don't do the, I don't know if you're seeing that out thumb grip.
Now, what is that?
It's basically, if you think about like reaching out and grabbing a bar, normally we'd wrap our thumbs around that bar.
Mm-hmm. Right. Your thumb would be in front of your body heading towards your feet.
Exactly. Right. And so some people use a grip where they kind of rest the bar on the palm of their hands and they bring the thumb outside. If you think about wrapping it around so that your thumb is on the same side as the rest of your fingers.
Mm-hmm.
And that's somewhat of a dangerous way to lift the, because the bar can roll off of you. For most people, you know, especially if you're starting out, even if you're benching, you know, one plate on each side, 135, if you were to lower that bar onto your chest and let go of that bar, it might feel uncomfortable, but it's certainly not going to, you know, you could rest it there for quite a while. So it's not as dangerous as it seems. You know, if you're doing some crazy movements and you're swinging that bar up real fast and you drop it on your chest, yeah, that's probably going to hurt.
Mm-hmm.
But
I see. So it's people trying to bench 200, 300 pounds that are going to crush themselves, not little old me.
Yeah. And even then, you know, by the time you get up to that point where you're able to bench 225 or 300, you're going to have the, you know, you're going to be a little bit more solid. You're going to know where your limit is. And, you know, I've never hit a point where I'm benching and I feel like I'm in danger.
I see. Well, that brings up an interesting question. So I'm, like I said, I'm about 166, 170. If I bench, I mean, I might only be able to bench 100 pounds right now. I mean, the days of me benching 200 are in high school. That seems like embarrassing, and I'd be a little sad to do that in a gym in public. And also, the idea that I could potentially double that seems just impossible. Could I actually go from lifting 100 pounds, lifting 200 pounds in some measurable amount of time?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, well, think about this, right? I don't know if you ever follow like Mr. Olympia, but, you know, Ronnie Coleman was Mr. Olympia for a few years back, and, you know, Jay Cutler had done it. Those guys, you know, Ronnie Coleman he's up there in age. And so you think about the most muscular guy basically in the world. And, you know, he's in his 40s. Now, you know, professional bodybuilders, it's a different thing. You know, they're definitely on drugs that we wouldn't really want to touch unless.
Well, and they're maximizing cuts and a level of detail that a powerlifter is not interested in.
Right. But yeah, you could definitely, I wouldn't be surprised if in 1 year, if you were benching 100, could you get to 200 in a year? Most definitely. As long as you're eating right and you're following a good lifting routine, and there's not something that that's going on that would prevent you from gaining that. You know, you have to be able to get enough protein absorption, and as long as you're getting enough calories, I've definitely seen that kind of progress. I've seen progress where, well, yeah, I mean, just to give you an example, I had cut down. I was about, you know, I'd kind of laid off for a while, maybe 2 years ago. Yeah, about 2 years ago, I was about 280, and I was
wow. How tall?
Yeah,
are you?
I was pretty chubby. I'm 6'3".
Wow.
But that was a pretty chubby for me at 280. I mean, I still have muscle on my frame, but I dieted all the way down from 280 to 185.
Oh my goodness, that's and a I did whole that person.
What's that?
That's an entire person.
Yeah, basically. And I did that in about a year. So last year, about, you know, 1 year ago, I was about 185. Now I'm about 220, but I am at a lower body fat percentage than I was at 185.
What is your body fat, if you don't mind my asking?
I'm probably about 8-9% right now. Go ahead.
Is that mostly diet? I mean, like, I just don't understand. Like I said, if I'm at like 18 or 19, I'm just not seeing how I'm going to pick 17 pounds of fat and turn it into anything else. And is it all diet, or what is the secret for that kind of six pack abs, especially if you're as old as Tom Cruise?
Well, the big deal is diet. You're absolutely right. You know, between that time, in 1 year, I guess I put on about 30 pounds of muscle, and I did that by having good protein. You know, if I like, well, maybe it makes sense to go over kind of the basic diet. What is healthy food for being in shape, especially for gaining muscle and for losing fat? So, you know, it's going to be a majority of your calories are going to come from protein. And then your next in line is probably going to be fats, good fats, which are going to be things like, you know, fish oils, flaxseed oil, natural fats, peanut butter, nuts, things like that. And then your third group is going to be carbs, and the carbs are going to come from low glycemic index sources, things like mostly like sweet potatoes, brown rice, green leafy vegetables, so a lot of broccoli, a lot of spinach. And by having that kind of ratio where you have very high protein, you have next in line fat, and then very low carbs, and the carbs that you do eat are low glycemic index, you kind of put your body in this state where it's, especially after you work out, you're highly anabolic, so you're able to gain mass from that protein and to rebuild muscle that gets broken down, and you're not storing this extra fat.
That seems kind of complicated.
What's complicated about it is, I guess when we talk about it that way, but maybe if I break down my schedule, it might make things a little bit simpler.
I think that would be helpful.
So, okay. In the morning, when I get up, I basically, the first thing I eat, and I pretty much eat the same meals every day, is I'll take some spinach, some frozen spinach, put it in a microwave container, throw some egg whites in there in a whole egg, and I'll just microwave that, mix it up, and throw a little bit of low-fat cheese on top to give it some flavor.
Okay.
And so that's my first meal, and that's just, you know, it's mostly protein, right? So, second meal of the day, you know, about midway between lunch, I'll have a Greek yogurt, which I'll just get the plain, no-fat Greek yogurt and add a little bit of Splenda to it. So that's another very high protein. Then maybe the third meal of the day, I'll typically have maybe either a sandwich that's on some kind of very high fiber bread, or even without the bread, or a salad with a little bit of chicken. Basically just looking for something that's going to be just some protein and not a lot of carbs.
Okay.
Then I might have like a snack in the middle of the day. Maybe I'll have just like I've got these Ostrim bars, which are like beef jerky, but they're made out of ostrich meat, and they're almost all protein. So there's my fourth meal, and it's almost protein. And then almost every night for dinner, I have chicken, like a chicken breast with some broccoli and maybe either a little bit of salad or just a tiny bit of brown rice or a sweet potato. And that's pretty much it. I might, the only variation might be before I go to bed, I might have a protein shake, or if I'm working out at the gym that day, then I'll have a protein shake after that workout.
Mm-hmm. And how much protein is a good amount for the average person doing, or someone who's trying to gain weight based on the, is there some rule of thumb for their weight that they should say this much weight and I need this much protein?
There's a couple of numbers that people throw out there. It's kind of across the board. I think probably the most common thing you'd hear is about 1 pound of, or 1 gram of protein per pound of muscle, of lean tissue. I tend to say 1.5 times your weight, which is a lofty goal, but I feel that if you can hit that goal, especially if you're cutting, it's more important to have higher protein because you need to keep that muscle. Remember that
the listener is not necessarily going to be as advanced as you, so they're not going to know what cutting is.
Okay,
and
right.
You're saying that I need 1.5 times my weight in grams in protein?
That's what
How much protein?
Typically recommend.
Like the average, like the standard kind of like, you know, nutritional amount that like the average Joe is supposed to have is something like, you know, what is it, like 50 to 60 grams of protein in a day. And you're giving a number that's hundreds of grams of protein in a day. Is that correct?
Yeah, I pretty much try to hit about 300 grams in a day. And I'm on a cut, which a cut basically means that I'm trying to lose fat.
Isn't that an awful lot of protein for the average Joe to, is a little difficult on their liver as well?
It's definitely difficult to do. I've found, you know, I've read a lot of studies. I've heard some things about protein liver, and there's really no conclusive proof that I could find as long as you're consuming enough water of there being any, mm-hmm. any serious, any kind of damage. So, mm-hmm. you know, it's, and again, this is something when, if you're trying to get to that 10% and under 10% body fat,
mm-hmm.
the kind of diet that I'm doing, you got to do it. There's no other way. But
that seems a lot. I mean, the numbers that I see online say that a 200 pound person should get about 75 grams of protein, and you're proposing 2, 3, 4 times that. That sounds like it'd be more for the average than the average, computer jockey's going to need.
I agree. And actually, so the diet that I'm doing is one of those diets that you don't really need to do until you're at maybe 12% body fat and you're trying to drop below that number, because that's where things get really hard. And especially because your muscle, becomes, catabolized at a much higher rate as your body kind of goes into the starvation mode and says, hey, I need to, you know, I need fuel. So here's all this muscle that we don't need. You know, I'm going to break this down.
I see.
But for the average person, you know, just let's say you're just a little bit overweight. Let's say you've been programming for, you know, last 5 or so years and you just kind of, you know, you're sitting at your desk a lot and you've put on maybe 20, 30, 40, 50 extra pounds and you just want to lose that. You know, mm-hmm. what should you do in that case? You shouldn't try and hit 200, 300 grams of protein. It's going to be too extreme of a lifestyle change. But
yeah, exactly.
What I recommend is, you know, kind of just like what you're doing, which is, you know, you're setting these, it sounds like you're setting these small goals, you know, to just maybe set like a 2 week goal and say every 2 weeks, I'm going to lose, you know, 3 to 5 pounds, whatever that number is. And you're just measuring that small goal, and you're changing your lifestyle so that, you know, you cut all the fast food out, get a little mm-hmm. bit more active. You know, maybe you run a couple times a week, or you do some mm-hmm. kind of exercise, get in the gym and try to lift, but set up a routine. So, you know, I think that's really important is you have to make this lifestyle change. You have to say, okay, I'm going to, you know, just like we get up in the morning, we go to work and we have our routine. We have to have our routine. Otherwise we're not going to stick to something. And so, you know, maybe you lift in 3 days a week, running 3 days a week or whatever that particular routine is. You get into this mode of, of a consistent diet that's nutritious. And, you know, the things that are good to eat are things like, you know, chicken, fish, broccoli, spinach, you know, brown rice, sweet potato, you know, eggs. If you're kind of building your diet around that, and you get mm-hmm. that into a schedule, then you're going to lose that weight. That's the way to really get into shape, I think, without trying to, you know, it gets a little hard to focus on every single little detail, which you don't have to do until you're at a very low body fat percentage, you're trying to get lower.
Well, that brings up a really interesting question that's kind of unique to the programmer, but it's also unique to the person that succeeds at this, is that the folks that I see succeeding at weight loss and muscle gain are measuring. They're measuring. How important is that? I know that the average programmer could throw themselves into this kind of lifestyle and start measuring everything. And that can be a good thing or a bad thing.
There's like this balance I found between burnout and having something to hold yourself accountable to and to see your progress. And I found that, at least for me, like when I was going from my 280 to 185, there, mm-hmm. you know, the big thing I did is I said, okay, I'm just going to set a 2-week goal of losing 5 pounds every 2 weeks, and I will meet that goal every week. And I adjusted based on that one measurement. So I didn't try mm-hmm. to measure. I didn't weigh myself every single day. I mm-hmm. weighed myself every couple of days, and I didn't weigh my food. But as I progressed towards that 2-week time frame, I knew it was. So maybe if I was at 250 and I knew I needed to get to 245, if 1 mm-hmm. week goes by and it's Monday and I'm looking at the scale and I'm still at 250, I haven't lost any weight, then I know, okay, this next week is going to be a pain because I'm going to have to cut my calories a lot because I messed up on the first week. So, you know, but then that sets me up for my goal for the next time that I realize, well, okay, let's start off a little bit stronger this week. And so by using just that one measurement point, I found that I could adjust. I knew what I was doing. I knew if I was underweight or overweight for my goal, and I would adjust my food based on that and my activity.
Right. So it sounds like being conscious. Don't just randomly do something. You know, I mean, if you change a variable, measure it, and then look at that variable the other side. Again, I don't mean to pick on your, but you obviously seem to have an ability and a technique to pull some of these things off. But some of the numbers that you're throwing out are still pretty surprising. Like I have heard, and it has been my experience, that losing more than a pound or two a week is pretty extreme. And you said you were pulling down, you were losing 2 pounds, 2.5 pounds a week.
Yeah, that was my goal. And I mean, it is a pretty hefty goal. And I do know how to diet. So that probably made it a little bit easier. You know, actually though, there is one thing that really helped me to do this, which I haven't really mentioned, which is I set up a treadmill mm-hmm. I work from home and I put a treadmill up in my loft. And I put a laptop, I got this little holder, it's this thing called like Surf Shelf, I think. Okay. And it straps onto there, and you can put a laptop on there. And then I mounted a monitor on the wall, and I just set the incline up on that treadmill, and I walk 1.5 miles or 2 miles per hour. And I would do that for about maybe just an hour and a half a day while mm-hmm. I was working.
I see. So that really does speak to the whole kind of, how do you want to lose weight? Well, you know, eat less, move more. And if you're a programmer, you could try to be really intense and work out a lot at night after you've done your day job, or like you've done, set up a treadmill, put a laptop on top of it, and just move more, right? Even a standing right. desk burns more calories than sitting down.
Oh, right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I mean, it's something that's so easy to do. You know, not everyone can really set up a treadmill. I mean, if you happen to work from home or if your employer lets you set up a treadmill, that it's great. But even, you know, you could come home from work and, you know, a good goal might be, hey, I'm going to spend an hour a night reading a technical book, something that's going to help my career. And while I'm reading that book, I'm going to be walking on a treadmill.
Yeah, I talk about that. I have a presentation I do on productivity, and I talk about feasible multitasking. and how so many people try to shove different kind of multitasking events into their lives. But one of the true things that you can do that is a reasonable amount of multitasking is to, you know, read and walk on the treadmill, or listen to a podcast and go for a run, or work on your laptop and have a treadmill or a standing desk.
Yep, exactly. Yeah. And that really helps. I mean, it you don't feel like you're working out. You don't feel like you're, you know, but this, you know, I've always believed in this idea of small progress, like being consistent is the most important thing in my life is, you know, sometimes it's like the other day it was pouring rain and I went out running and my wife said, "What are you crazy?" And I said, if I drop this ball, all the other balls will drop. Like, I have to run. I have to be consistent every day. Otherwise, you know what? That the extra, you know, the thing I'm recording for Pluralsight tonight, I won't do that because I'll slack off in that area. So it's like, but these small little bits of consistency of doing, making just a little bit of progress every single day ends up being so big when you look at it from this view of years. You know, 1 year from now, doing just a little bit, even just burning an extra 200 calories a day. You know, if you think about if you just, that's not much of a deficit. That's, it would hardly cost you anything to lose 200 calories in the negative a day, right? Below your maintenance. But in a year's time frame, you'd lose how many pounds?
Yeah, that's another good point. Focusing on this, not on a month by month or week by week, but on the long haul. Once you make something a habit and focus on it over the course of a year, it's the 50 weeks where things start to multiply, not the 2 and 3 weeks.
Yep, exactly. And the, you know, the other really important thing about that, I think a lot of people, they'll lose weight. In fact, I did this myself quite a few times, this kind of yo-yo approach where I lose all this weight and then I gain it back. And, you know, this time, you know, like I said, it's been about 2 years since I did that big weight loss. And now I've not only held off the fat, but actually lost more fat and put on muscle. So I've kind of been pretty steady. And the thing that I did differently this time that really, well, my mindset changed is to change my lifestyle to be, you know, I'm not, what I'm doing right now is I'm not thinking in my head, oh, I can't wait till I lose this last 5 pounds so I can go king and get a burger. Or, you know, I'm not thinking, oh, I can't wait till I can eat normal again, because that's, if I think that way, then I'll just revert back to my old habits. Instead, what I think now is, gosh, it feels good to be eating healthy every day and every once in a while to enjoy a treat. And I rather live my life, the rest of my life this way, just feeling good about myself and feeling good about exercising and eating healthy, where it doesn't feel like a sacrifice to me because I've learned to embrace that as my lifestyle versus this viewpoint of, oh, I just got to get, it's going to take me 2 months to lose this weight. Really? I just got to get through this 2 months and then I'll be set. I'll be free. You know, that kind of viewpoint, it enslaves you. Like the fitness and the eating healthy is something that's enslaving you and causing you pain and turmoil versus the view of the healthy lifestyle. It's something that you can do forever and you'll keep the weight off.
Very cool. I like that a lot. All right. Last question, as we wrap up, when do I get to cheat? Is it like once a week? Like when do I get to go to Dairy Queen and have like a blizzard and not feel like I just gained a pound in like one sitting?
So that's a good question. I tend to, you know, I've experimented with a lot of things. I've had cheat days or cheat meals and I've eliminated that completely from my vocabulary. Now, does this mean that I never have like a slice of pizza or I never, you know, have a drink or, you know, have a ice cream or a cookie? No, that's not true. I do those things, but I do them in moderation and I don't consider them a cheat meal because it's like that mindset thing. When I think about it as far as, okay, I can't wait till Sunday because on Sunday night I can, you know, just pig out at McDonald's. If I think that way, then the whole week I am, you know, striving for that and I'm bombarded with temptations because I'm seeing as what I'm doing as a sacrifice and one meal I get on Sunday as a relief. But instead, what I try to do is I try to change my mindset and say, okay, look, you know, my standard routine is to eat healthy. And, you know, based on my judgment, every once in a while, you know, maybe on Saturday night or whatever, I might eat a little bit, eat something that's unhealthy, but that's okay because I've eaten healthy during the week. And I know it's kind of a subtle difference, but it's really, to me, that made the most effect is the mindset difference of saying, you know, this is not a cheat meal. It's just, it's normal to in moderation have something that's a little bit indulgent, but it has to be in moderation, and it's normal. You know, part of this lifestyle is that you don't just go all militant and say, I'm never going to eat, you know, an ounce of sugar again, but you say my standard 90% of the time I eat healthy, 10% of the time I eat unhealthy in moderation.
All right. Well, thanks so much, John, for sharing your style with us.
Sure. No problem.
This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes. We'll see you again next week.